Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John, engineering and producing our program. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. Monday, March 4th, 2024. A big shout out before we get underway here to all my friends who came out to the Bon Voyage Travel Show at the El Conquistador. Ryan Hansen, the president, CEO of Bon Voyage, and I did a presentation. The room was, every chair was taken, standing room only, and we talked travel, and it was fun, I'll tell you. And a lot of listeners came up after the show or after the presentation and said how much they enjoy listening to my work here on the Buckmaster Show. So that was very gratifying. We are in our 14th year now with the radio project, coming to you from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio on 1030 KVOI, The Voice, Tucson's only source for local news talk. And we have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, which is very rich in content. 13 full years of programs that we have available on our podcast. The Buckmaster Show live line for our telephone interviews, which is 790-2040, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Monday, we get things rolling with what we call the Monday One-on-One, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, family-owned and run since 1985. Moe and his family specialize in custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, picture framing and hanging services, and hanging systems. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. The Monday One-on-One today, Tucson attorney Kathy Winger returns to the program. She is a sought-after speaker on cybersecurity and how businesses and individuals can protect against hackers and cybercrime. Kathy's the owner of her own law firm. She is a business, real estate, banking, and data security attorney representing companies, banks, credit unions, and consumers in commercial and corporate transactions. She is an adjunct professor. Kathy loves teaching at Pima Community College, where she teaches cyber law and ethics. She also served as a consultant and provided content for the online version of PCC's cyber law and ethics course. Hey, Kathy, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bill. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you for asking. You know, we all want to be, I guess, in some kind of a top 10 list if it's favorable. But when it comes to cybersecurity, I don't know. Arizona is, folks living here are most at risk of the top 10 states. How do you think that went down?
Well, I agree with you in terms of lists we want to be on and don't want to be on. I will say a positive in that, if we could find one, is we're at the bottom of the list. So we have the fewest, we have the smallest risk, but still one of the top 10 in the country. I looked into this a little bit more to see if I could find any reason why. Why Arizona? I didn't find anything. Some of the factors that people talked about in this study and how they came to the results, they looked at gender, and in most of the high cybercrime states, victims are more often men than women. Huh. Age, most victims range in age from 30 to 60 years old. And location, one of the things that did jump out, a significant number of the highest states are in the Southwest United States.
Interesting. So I would have thought, though, maybe the older people would have been more vulnerable.
Yeah.
You said 30 to 60.
30 to 60.
I'd say if you had asked me, I would have guessed 55 and above.
Yeah. Now, in Arizona, it is. It's over 60 group. But when they took the average, for example, Texas, the primary targets were between the ages of 30 and 39.
Huh.
So there really it doesn't seem to be rhyme or reason to it. I think the conclusion that can be reached from this is what you and I talk about all the time when I come on this show. Mm-hmm. You know, cyber crimes is a it's a crime of opportunity. Yes. And so the easier it is to commit the crime, the more likely you will be a victim of the crime. Mm-hmm. And that's really, and so what comes out of this study, because when we talk about, you know, cyber security and data, privacy, artificial intelligence, all of these things, the same things that I talk about with you on this show come out again and again. The idea that you have to be really careful online, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you have to stay informed about what's happening, what kind of scams are out there, what are the best safety practices, mm-hmm. online.
Do your updates that come from the computer companies that do these,
exactly.
updates. Some people see that and it says, we can do it at a later,
exactly.
time. Remind me. And they never get around to it.
No, they don't. But, and I will tell you specifically, courts have looked at data breaches where something happened because an update wasn't implemented. And courts have said, you know, to the companies who didn't do it, that's your responsibility.
Yes.
You know, you needed to do that. So, yes, that's a great example.
Yeah.
Simple little things, but you just have to be really, really careful. And so for this report, it's sort of more of the same. We're in the top 10, but then if someone says to me, Kathy, what should we do? We're in, you know, the top 10, one of the top 10 states for cybercrime. It's the same things that I would tell people to do before this report was done or before it came out.
Change your passwords regularly.
That's
right.
Have a password strategy.
Yeah.
Don't share your phone. I listened to a podcast about people finding someone's passcode for their phone, and they're able to then taking the phone and being able to get in and access everything on the phone before the person even realizes they don't have it anymore.
Wow.
Just amazing, amazing. And they were interviewing a person who had done it, and he was talking about how easy it was. So your passwords, your passcode to your phone, you know, remember when you're carrying around your phone, you're carrying around a computer.
Yeah.
With access, yeah. to your bank accounts, with access to your health records, with everything.
Yeah.
You need to protect it like that. You need to view it like that.
Mm-hmm.
So those sorts of, they call that cyber hygiene.
Mm-hmm.
Being careful, you know, doing all these things. That's really what this report tells me. You know, if you're not doing that, you should start. If you are doing that, keep doing it. You know, and keep up to date on what kind of scams are happening out there.
Because when we get these alerts to take the upgrade,
mm-hmm.
this is something that I'm sure that Google and all of them take so seriously.
Yes.
And they have worked very hard to try to stay ahead of the hackers.
Exactly, exactly.
And that isn't easy.
That's exactly right. And the same podcast I was saying that I had listened to, they talked about the fact that Apple, because this was an iPhone, Apple has a fix for that in, mm-hmm. its latest update.
Yeah.
You know, they've enacted additional measures to help protect against that. Well, if you don't update when you get the notice of it, you're not going to get that additional protection. So that's exactly right.
I want to spend a considerable amount of time today, Kathy, and we'll begin on this, then we'll take the break and come back, about artificial intelligence. This area has just exploded. The security risks seem to be growing daily on this. I don't know. Where do we begin?
Well, I'd like to begin just to talk a little bit, just to clarify what we're talking about.
Okay.
When we're talking about artificial intelligence. It's just technology that enables computers and machines to simulate human intelligence and problem-solving capabilities. So the machines are solving the problems just as we as humans would solve a problem. And when I was looking into it and thinking about what I would want people to know, you know, one of the important things is, how does it affect our lives personally? Where might it come up? And some of the examples of it, employment decisions. You know, if you're applying for a job and you're submitting a resume, a lot of times companies use AI and it just goes through and pulls out keywords from your resume and decides whether or not to move you on to the next level. It's
really
not
a vetting process with the AI.
Yeah, it's not a human being saying, I'm going to sit down and read read your resume. It's a program, and that's just, it's been trained.
So a human being may not even be reading the resume on the first round.
Exactly. So it comes up in that situation. Credit decisions in the banking area, again, you know, you can have a program that takes all the factors into consideration, looks at your loan application, and, you know, based on that, can make a decision whether you get credit or not. Again, it's not a human being doing it, but it's what traditionally and typically was a human being's decision. Someone would look at a credit application and go through and make a decision. That's not what's happening anymore.
And the corporate people, you can see why they like it.
Sure.
It's fewer human beings that they have to employ.
Exactly.
They can just rely on AI for the for some of this decision making.
Exactly. And it's efficient. You know, if you get 200 resumes in response to an ad for a job, and you can put it through a program and only 20 come out that have the qualifications you're looking for, that just saved the HR person all the time of reviewing the 200 resumes. So it's an efficiency matter as well. It also comes up with respect to insurance and what your insurance rates might be and what kind of insurance you may or may not qualify for. Again, when you what happens with AI and the way that it works is it takes information. It takes lots and lots of information, and it feeds it into the computer, and then the computer is trained to recognize patterns, and then you can use that to make decisions on future applications or future sources of information.
Well, we want to dig a little deeper into this, and we're going to take a break right now, but I want to talk, Kathy, about Mona's Danish Bakery, and I know you love bakery goods, right?
I do.
Well, we both
We should talk the whole rest of the time about
Mona's
bakery goods.
Yeah, Mona's Danish Bakery, and where they're also now serving liquor at Mona's.
Even better.
Yeah, they got the they got the liquor license, and so they're doing mimosas, the champagne and orange juice. A lot of people love that with their breakfast. You can have a beer with your lunch. They have bottled beer and domestic beer. I know the imported beer they're pouring by the bottle is Peroni from Italy. Pretty good beer. Mm-hmm. So they've got that going now. That's the latest thing up at Mona's Northeast Corner, Swan and Sunrise. The website's monasdanishbakery.com. They do take Monday off. They're open Tuesday through Sunday. Doors open at 6:30. More with Kathy Winger, cybersecurity expert. And my goodness, there is a lot to talk about in the area of AI. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our Monday one-on-one, where we take a deep dive into a particular subject. Today it's cybersecurity. The Monday one-on-one is presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. They are located right next to Copenhagen at Fort Lowell and Dodge. And that's that little center over there where Moe and his family operate. It's doing real well, especially with the addition, and they're not a sponsor, but I'll give them a free plug. Monsoon Chocolate has opened up a location over there and right next to Mo. And so they're doing real well. So that center is really doing quite well right now. The Monday one-on-one guest, Kathy Winger, is here, cybersecurity expert. Kathy loves teaching. She's been very involved with Pima Community College. Pima's been very good to this particular program. In fact, tomorrow we do our every other month Pima Community College interview. So we like Pima Community College. And Kathy, you love teaching over there, don't you?
I do. I enjoy it so much. The program is amazing. It's a relatively new program. And, you know, my students just blow me away. They really do. They're so interested and engaged in the topic. And I just love it. It's just an absolute pleasure. It does not feel like work to do it.
Okay. In our first segment, we talked about Arizona being number 10 on the top 10 list of at risk for cyber crime. We're now talking about artificial intelligence. This is being used a lot in the healthcare field. Why do you suppose that is, Kathy?
Well, because the healthcare field has the first thing that's important for AI and creating AI is to have data. And so in the healthcare field, there are lots of sources of data that can be used to train the machinery. So you have the electronic records of patients, you have clinical trials, you have the medical literature, you have insurance claim data, you have pharmacy data, you have information that people like me, I put this on my watch, how many steps
all
I take.
Areas
exactly
to the AI model
to train it to put the data. It needs a lot of data to be created.
Yeah.
So you take all that information in, and then you train using that information to find patterns to train the machines to make decisions that humans would make.
And of course, the skeptic in me says, "Uh-oh." I don't know about AI into my healthcare stuff, but I better get used to it because it's here.
Exactly. And I'll tell you an example I saw that, and when you say it's here, it's so true. There's an algorithm, which an algorithm is just a set of commands to the computer that has already been developed, and it can identify skin cancer by analyzing the image of a lesion on the skin.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not. In other words, a picture of a patch of skin, you can use AI to determine whether it's benign or cancerous, and it performs as well as board-certified dermatologists.
Wow.
So, you know, that's just one example.
It performs as well as a human eyeball From a trained dermatologist on that same piece of skin.
And so at the break, you know, we were talking a little bit about it's not all bad. There are all these benefits. Imagine being able to get that treatment. It can be more people can get it. It can be wider spread because it's done through a machine rather than a person. Yeah. And so you can see some of the benefits. There are smartphone apps that can identify developmental disorders in infants based on their facial features.
Oh my goodness.
They can diagnose autism in young children based on their eye tracking. Mm. The things that can be done are really, you know, kind of amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, they call it predictive analysis. So once, you know, the information is in there, the program can make predictions. How long is the patient going to live? What kind of meds should they take? What's the course of treatment? All of those things, because so much of that information was already put in and the results of it. You know, in the medical community, you can see which clinical trial worked on which type of cancer. Mm-hmm. And so the machine can tell you, well, this is the drug that would work for this type of cancer. And so I think that that's a good example of
how it's happening.
Now, you brought up a great point. You know, I'm a lawyer, and lawyers, we typically look at risks, what negative could happen.
Yeah, let's talk negative.
Yeah, the negatives of it, the point that you brought up is absolutely true, the effect on employment.
Yes.
What happens to all the radiologists and the pathologists just in the medical field? Just with that little example that I've given you of skin cancer, that's throughout when it comes to AI. If machines can do it, what happens to the human component? What happens to the jobs?
Could be a lot of unemployed doctors.
Exactly. And I'm hearing that there's AI for lawyers, and I'm thinking, uh-oh.
Good thing you're going to be going more into teaching.
Exactly. But it's really,
that's
huge.
You're at the right
huge.
Point for teaching.
Exactly. Maybe it's a good time to pull back.
So that's some of the downside. You want to hit on some of the other negs, like
Of the other negs. You know, how do you make sure that it's effective and that it's safe?
Yeah.
You know, how do you make sure? What happens when something goes wrong? I teach in my cybersecurity class that I teach at Pima. I talk about an event that happened several years ago with a self-driving car being tested.
Yes.
And a pedestrian being killed.
I remember that incident.
Outside of a crosswalk.
Yes.
The litigation that came from that, civil and criminal, with respect to who is responsible. Yeah. It's a whole, you're taking legal principles that have been applied in car accident cases for years, but now you have to apply them to a car that drives automatically.
So who then bears responsibility?
There's question of the manufacturer, but they still looked at the behavior of the pedestrian. They looked at the city. Was it marked to cross? All of the traditional things. Mm. There were criminal charges against the driver.
Wow.
That were just recently, they ended up settling, you know, she pled to something lesser. Uh-huh. But everybody was pulled in one way or another. So who's responsible? From a legal perspective, that's a whole brand new area.
It is. And, you know, the car commercials now, you know, I'm old school, but when I, you know, all they're pushing the AI, take your hands off the wheel. Mm-hmm. You can eat lunch while you're driving across country. Or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm old school.
Well, and
taking hands off the, I don't know.
Well, and they talk about what's the driver's responsibility? You know, does a driver, you know, do you know as a driver you're not supposed to be watching a television show while the car, you know, that kind of thing. So all of that is now out there and is going to have to be determined.
And there has been some regulation. The FCC and the Federal Trade Commission
have
kind of gotten involved here as far as when you get a call from a scammer. Not all of the AI are scam, but dealing with political ads.
Exactly.
Like someone calling and saying, this is President Joe Biden.
Exactly. And that's what happened. There was in a primary election in the Northeast. I forget, Maine, maybe. I'm not sure of the state. There was.
I think it was Maine.
A robocall purportedly was Joe Biden giving false information. And so the Federal Elections Commission and the FTC has banned, or for the FTC, under the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, they looked at that and said, if you're using AI in a phone call like that, you have to disclose that it's AI generated, mm-hmm. that it's not the person. Mm-hmm. So they're taking some steps, you know, but it's sort of
kind
looking
of baby
in the rear
steps
view mirror.
Because the scammers are going to find probably a way around that.
Exactly, exactly. And as long as we're looking behind us, things are happening in front of us that we're not addressing.
How about your concluding remarks here? We've got about 2 minutes.
Okay. What I would say is two things. The other concern with AI, and this is really sort of a broader societal concern, is making sure that it's fair and that it doesn't discriminate. All of those things, because those can be built in. You know, they're still depending on the persons that input the information. You know, so they're still, and courts are looking into that, and courts are considering that. That's the first thing. And then the second thing, and I just noticed today, and I thought, I'm glad I'm going to talk about this today, is, again, privacy concerns.
Uh-huh.
All of our information is going into, you know, the healthcare is going in and being used to create, you know, the machine learning. But that's our information, and how is it protected? And the reason that I say that is I just read this morning that United Healthcare was a victim of ransomware. And they had a data breach.
Oh.
So that's healthcare information, you know, so that's something that's always something that we have to consider, that, you know, needs to be protected, and that we need to be careful with it. And it doesn't change in the context of AI. It's still an issue with respect to that.
It's probably to the point now that everybody's social security number has been compromised
at some
point.
And you look at Medicare, you know, that's what they use for Medicare, is your social security number.
I know.
And it's just...
Kathy, it's always a delight to have you with
too,
us.
Bill. Thank
Time
you.
Goes so fast. All right. Our Monday One-on-One with Kathy Winger was presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Moe'sGallery.com is their website, and they're located at Fort Lowell and Dodge. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is Buckmaster. That's me. I'm Bill Buckmaster, and we're in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Perfect time of year. According to the Weather Service, winter is now over in Tucson. Yeah, the meteorological definition of winter is December, January, and February. So we're in March. So we're in spring. So that means great time to go over to Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. They've got everything you need for your garden on the 13-acre site. GreenThingsAZ.com. The sister business is Zocalo Village, ZocaloVillage.com. Green Things in their 53rd year of business. Maybe it's 54. Who knows? I mean, it's over a half century. They didn't get off the bus yesterday, as I like to say, and they're open daily. When we do our telephone interviews, which is coming right up, that's presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. I've got the formal introduction now for my friend Keith Rosenblum. Time for our monthly border report. Hosted by longtime border observer Keith Rosenblum, whose resume includes border reporting for both the Arizona Daily Star and the Arizona Republic. He's a former congressional aide to the late United States Representative Jim Colby. Jim represented Southern Arizona for almost a quarter century. I think it's about 22 years. Keith, how are you, sir? Hey, Keith, how's it going? Keith, Earth to Keith. did we lose?
I say, Bill, hello. Hey. I continue to observe.
Oh, there you go. How you doing, my friend?
I am doing well, and I am continuing to observe. Yeah, I'm a longtime border observer.
Well, that's what you were just doing when I did that very nice introduction. I kind of rewrote the intro for you, and then there was some dead air because you were looking border observing. Yeah,
that's exactly what I was doing. And in my case, it just like sucks up all the oxygen for others in about a 50-meter area.
Yep. I want to begin today with this article that I thought was so good in the Wall Street Journal. Border crackdowns won't solve the immigration crisis. More walls, police will never be enough. More walls and police will never be enough to stop migrants from coming to the U.S. for the lower skilled jobs the American economy needs. And this was written by a gentleman in Holland. Hein de Haas is his name, professor and sociologist. Love that name, HDH. How about that for his nickname? A University of Amsterdam founding member of the International Migration Institute, author of How Migration Really Works, the facts about the most divisive issues in politics. What he talks about, Keith Rosenblum, is what we've been talking about with you on this program for years, that both the left and right are wrong on this particular topic. They're wrong about the real reasons for our migration problem.
The Chinese are the only ones really who have solved the problem. They built huge walls and they took lots of citizens to buttress those walls. This last July, I was at those walls. That's impressive. It's very difficult for people to get out of those walls if you have enough people. If you become like in East Germany and you're able to have enough citizens spying on one another, the problem is that that's very costly. Because if you have people spying on one another, that's something that the opportunity cost is innovation or working in a factory or doing something else that people start. They just, their economy, their currency becomes spying on one another. And in the case of walls, they do, at a certain point, if they're high enough and reinforced enough, they do a good job. You can do it. The question is, I mean, I've often thought about this issue when it comes to thinking about HOAs. Like if we were to go invade an HOA in Tucson somewhere in Rita Ranch or another part of town, what could be done really to reinforce it? You could keep people in an HOA or keep them out if you were ready to sacrifice all of the other issues of the day. And we are not going to keep people out. There will always be the sea. There will always be burrowing. There will always be catapulting. And we have lived it here, and we've decided for a long time. I can remember the Wall Street Journal at the time of Simpson Mazzoli and IRCA, the Immigration Reform Control Act, people believing that was the solution. And now we have this kind of amnesty, and now we'll take care of it, and then 10 years later, we're revisiting it. And so if there was ever a greater imperative for the United States and wealthier countries to figure out how to make economies elsewhere comfortable and safe, and the two go hand in hand. You can have an economy that's comfortable, where people are doing well, but if you don't have safety, if you have people who are fearful of being kidnapped or having to pay protection money, or that have to have guards, it won't work. And if you have people who are simply safe but not earning anything, then you're sufficient, then you also fail. And so the United States is obviously, for a long time, I guess, you want to look in Europe or Africa, look at Albania and Poland and Italy and Greece. How do you keep Albanians out, this huge, this area where they're earning one-tenth of what everybody else is earning? So, there, and by the way, the University of Arizona had a great scholar, Ed Williams, who was a professor.
I remember Ed well. Yeah.
Yeah. And Ed took his know-how from the U.S.-Mexican border, where he'd done lots of work, and he wound up, I believe it was a Fulbright, he wound up with some kind of fellowship to go to Europe and study the immigration patterns as well. So, yeah, people in the end, they're not so much worried about the social life and about getting reunited with family as they are both glimpsing, being a part of the present and glimpsing what's to come and figuring out what's going to happen for the next generations. I'm sure that I'm not telling anything to a buckmaster. I don't know your origins, but I'm sure that at some point some buckmaster in where? England or Scotland?
England and Ireland. The buckmasters for sure are from the London area, going all the way back to the masters of the buck. They were kind of in charge of procuring the deer for the deer hunts.
Yeah, well, some guy who also used cliches and had friends in the travel business and gardening business, three centuries back, no doubt made the very, equilibrated or decision to head to the new land. And that's why we're enriched by having you moderating a talk show.
And his name was John Buckmaster, and he did come over here. And I think there were 8 or 9 the kids came along, and they did arrive. Yeah. And I think in the 1600s, actually, and there are now 2,000 approximately Buckmaster families in North America, in Canada, and the United States.
Well, in one of the many, many, in one of the seances that you conduct over there at the radio station, you might want to summon some of those people and ask them whether they agree with the Wall Street Journal article.
Yeah, and let me also give the bottom line of Mr. DeHaas's conclusion. It is that the focus, he says that it's hypocritical, the immigration system that refuses to acknowledge the U.S. economy's persistent need for lower skilled labor. The rise in illegal immigration is mainly driven by unprecedented labor demand and the absence of legal channels to accommodate it. There you go, Keith.
Beautiful. And it's true. And I see these people outside of the pedestrian crossing in Nogales, and I see them on the roads of northern Mexico winding their way up here.
All right, why don't we take a break right here? More with Keith Rosenblum. It's the Buckmaster Show. It's our Border Report with Keith. We will be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Hope everybody had a wonderful weekend. A lot of folks I know love the Silver City area, the great place to get away for a weekend or even longer. Southwest New Mexico, spelled out, .org, is the starting place. I would suggest checking out their website. All sorts of tempting outdoor activities for you in that area. It's only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. Lots to do, great places to stay, and great places to eat as well in historic Silver City. Some beautiful Victorian architecture over there. time, and it is now segment number two of our monthly Border Report, hosted by, as I like to say, longtime Border Observer Keith Rosenblum. And in our first segment with Keith, we were talking about tough rhetoric is ignoring the economic realities of migration. So, Keith, we are up against a deadline here, supposedly April 1st. Pima County runs out of funds to take care of migrants who are coming across legally, and they will be, we're told, there will be street releases. Your take on that, sir?
This is one of those areas that has no precedent, at least that I know about. And I have family in New York City. My a son of mine goes in. My brother, a nephew, is a professor at NYU. My brother Peter's in is in upstate, but goes into the city all the time. And they'll tell you about what a how horrendous it is, and how difficult, and yet how people are also extending their arm and helping out. This is one of those areas that I think that it's perplexing. I suppose Keith Rosenblum has no solution whatsoever, except to say that immigrant societies, Israel comes to mind, have figured out a way to handle large numbers of immigrants. Are we going to turn them back? I think we're going to have to, if we're going to tell the world that our immigration system is serious, then we're going to have to be doing deportations, which, by the way, take place out of Tucson. We regularly airlift. We take people back to Mexico, I think to Mexico City. And the way that I know that is because I was once at I know it goes on now for other reasons, but I also know that when I was in Mexico City on the Mexico City airport, there was on the screen, it showed a nonstop flight back to Tucson. And I thought, well, that's weird. Where'd that come from?
Yeah.
It was a deport plane.
Yeah.
It was returning. And flying back to Tucson, it goes back empty. I was going to try to see if I could bribe the crew.
Get a free ride.
Along, right? One more person. But the answer to your question is the numbers will be, the absolute numbers will be moderate, I believe. In other words, we've stemmed the absolute numbers that are coming in for the entire 2,000 miles. The border governors have made their point by sending buses and other, and people on their own have found their way throughout the United States. I know this because I have friends also in Denver and in Portland. And it's a morass. And the question then becomes, what are we going to do with the people who are already in our yard, so to speak? And are we going to help out? If we can imagine more Santa Rita parks, but filled with immigrants, how are we going to extend our arms? Tucson is known for its hospitality. That doesn't mean that every family needs to host Venezuelans, or Haitians. But that's going to be a test of our moral fabric, I think, and our willingness to extend a hand. But I also think that we have been turning back numbers. We've been sending a message to the rest of the world that the risk is higher. In other words, people are going to come no matter what. They're going to come through the Darien Pass. There was a marvelous New York Times podcast about a week or so ago about a guy who made the trip from China. He made a trip from China because he goes via Ecuador. He comes up through the Darien Pass, comes up through Mexico. And when people want to do it, they're going to do it, period. They are going to, the Dutch guy is right. But if you make the price high enough, then you're going to end up with just the people. You're not going to end up with the masses. You're going to end up with people who do a cost-benefit analysis. No matter how poor you are, you can do a cost-benefit analysis. If you learn that between the cartels, which control territory, approaching the U.S. border in Mexico, if you can learn that we, as a matter of immigration policy, aren't going to tolerate it, we're going to dissuade a lot of people from doing it. And I think that's where both the Biden and a potential, perish the thought, but it's true, Trump administration would be dealing with this issue as well. We're going to up the ante quite a bit. And word will get out that if you're going to come to the U.S., you'll have these, you'll likely end up, again, in one of these detention centers. We don't call them prison camps, right? We call them detention facilities where we hold people for, 3-6 months. The finances is an important part of it, too, because we are doing street releases. And this is a problem that we just, it has the potential of being apocalyptic if there aren't changes at the border itself, but it also has the potential to make us human and to be offering refuge to people when they need it. And it will also awaken us to the fact that we better take some role in looking at the economies of El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, Venezuela, and do what we can to keep people there. I wish there is no solution. I wish there was a 1, 2, or 3 point solution, as there are so many issues of gridlock in the world today. And the United States has these hot spots right now in Ukraine, Taiwan, Gaza, and we have one at our back door, and it's unclear which of these is the most volatile. Each one of them is. What are we going to do as where we can?
You know, you bring up something interesting, and I think we're already starting to see it. Some of the Catholic diocese, the bishop came out, he had a video that he posted about asking people to kind of step up. You're going to see there are a lot of good people in this community, and there are going to be a lot of people that are going to want to help folks coming up, and they're not going to be asking for money from the government to help these people.
We've done it as Rosenblums. We've done it. We've all me and siblings and I have been doing this, because when people are coming to the U.S., had it not been for undocumented workers, I wouldn't have been able to raise the kids that I have. I went to look at who the best quality, where was the best quality daycare that I could get. I wasn't paying attention to any issues that were economic and paying. I mean, I couldn't have afforded, I could not have afforded to be paying benefits and Social Security to people at a certain part of our lives, but I could find undocumented workers who were caring for kids in their homes, and two of my kids were raised in such an environment, and they got marvelous loving care. And I could not have afforded at that time a daycare facility. I could not have afforded to pay somebody minimum wage plus all the benefits. And so you just do, you know, we all do cost benefit analyses, and we all wonder whether taking this or that shortcut. I mean, I committed a felony years ago with two others, giving a ride back. This is during the AZ 1070, so it's called, laws, where I helped somebody to get back to Mexico because he was dying. But again, before I did it, we weighed the fact that under AZ 1070, we were committing a felony. We were knowingly transporting an undocumented worker or undocumented person in the U.S. And it was, I remember what class it was. But it doesn't matter. Again, laws are laws. Mm. They don't allow sometimes for the by the way or here's what I was doing. The explanation is secondary. The explanation might come into play at sentencing.
Yeah, that you're talking about now, an element that would be the humanitarian / good Samaritan ethic that I think is really important.
Well, and I mean this really requires a demographer. This entire conversation requires a demographer. The United States is a shrinking society. But for the immigrant population of the U.S. and but for illegal immigration, we're a declining population. Mexico has a birth rate. I think we're like 1.6 or 1.8. I'm not really sure. Mexico, I think, is 1.4 or 5. Mexico goes into a vast decline come 2045, similar to what Italy is doing right now, similar to what Korea and Japan are doing right now. So when you say, or the Dutch guy says, we better bring in the workers who can do the, he's absolutely right. And by the way, where are those people? Where are they to say, help me take care of my kids? We're going to need it, but politically we're out of touch. It's almost as if we're trying to manage the economic angle and the social together, but they scream incompatibility.
The political has taken over a lot of that whole, probably like 90% of that whole dialogue, Keith.
Bill, I can go conversation after conversation with people that you know, prominent people.
Yes.
People who are staunch, hard, conservative people. Yes. And you know what? They invariably call and say, we have to have this tough immigration. We count these people in. And by the way, Keith, my gardener, my caretaker, my daughter's boyfriend, always, this is America in 2024, and it's probably a good. We're just hypocrites. We're great when it comes to institutional requisites, but when it comes to personal, can I please have a bye? just, okay, look, I know this guy who does it, and there we go.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Good conversation, Keith. Let you go on that note. Hope to see
Don't
you soon.
Presidential election in Mexico, June 2nd.
Right.
Dramatic things coming up. Don't know which way that country's going, but we'll talk about that next month.
Okay.
Put that on your calendar.
Okay, I look forward to it.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Keith. Always a pleasure. Keith Rosenblum with us, taking kind of a deep dive into maybe something you don't always hear about. Maybe both sides are wrong, the left and the right, about this whole immigration dialogue. That'll do it for the Buckmaster Show, kicking off a new week, the first full week of March. Hope everybody has a great afternoon. We'll be back with you with the Buckmaster Show at 12:04 tomorrow. Have a great afternoon, everybody.